This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Go. Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is
this the tiger?
The neutral zone.
Oh, home run.
Good.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Rock Richardson.
What's going on? It's another edition of the Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson, and it's becoming that period of time in the sports world where there's like too much to keep track of. You've got baseball, you've got hockey, you've got basketball, NBA finals, you've got a soccer game this weekend. It's just a plethora of stuff. In fact, I bought a new iPad, and I have been watching some stuff on my iPad as well as my TV at the same time. That is how jam-packed things are. So we hope that you're keeping busy out there with the sports world, but also getting a chance to get outside and enjoy the nice weather, which finally seems to be here and staying. Who's here with me now is one Cam Jenkins. Cameron, how are you?
I'm doing okay. It's like I usually say, it's another beautiful day in the neighborhood, being Friday and blue skies. So yeah, looking forward to having a little chit and chat about sports over the next hour.
Absolutely. Also joining us is Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Like you said, June is playoff time when you're referring to the NHL and the NBA, and also baseball is well into the season, and it seems I am also filling up my month with some sports. I scored some Jays tickets and also some Argos tickets. Ooh. So it's going to be a fun month.
Love it. I cannot convince my fiance, soon to be wife, to go to a CFL football game for two reasons. One, because she doesn't understand football at all. And two, if I take her to a football game and it's in September or October, it's far too cold for her to be at a football game. So I'll have to be getting...
For God's sakes, we're Canadians. She should be able to do this.
I know, right? It's true. But I think, Cameron, it's more based on the not understanding football, and there's too much going on all at once. But I do love the CFL, and I'm so glad that they are they're back in the fold, and things are just trucking along to what we hope is going to be a good season. And listen, I want to preview something that's going to be happening next week. Next week is our fifth year anniversary here on AMI Audio. We're going to be having some good times, some reminiscing from about 4:30 Eastern time till 5 o'clock, just going over some of the stuff we've gotten to do and talk about some of the good stories. We're going to be joined by Brett Wills, and he's going to come and join the fray. Plus, I'm going to tell you that we are going to have a surprise guest, which I will leave it at that at this moment in time. But it's going to be a great show, so tune in next week at 4 p.m. Eastern for the live broadcast of that. What's coming up now is our headlines.
The Canadian men's soccer team will be taking on Panama this coming Sunday. The match will be taking place at BC Place in Vancouver. This comes after the decision was made to cancel the original but controversial friendly against Iran.
Catcher Russell Martin, Canadian catcher Russell Martin, has announced his retirement. Martin is a four-time All-Star, a Silver Slugger Award winner, which is given to the best offensive player at that position. Look, Russell Martin is a guy who has been there, done it all. Any team that he was on, it always seemed to make it to the playoffs. The only thing that eluded him was that World Series. Congratulations to Russell Martin on what was a wonderful career. Sad to see him go, but wish him all the best in his future endeavors.
Canada Men's World Hockey Championship team made it back to the podium over the past couple of weeks. This year, the men came home with a silver medal after winning gold medal the last championships.
The Montreal Canadiens have announced Martin St. Louis as their 32nd head coach in franchise history.
Those are your headlines for this week. Let's check in on our Twitter poll questions. And last week's question was, have you been watching the World Hockey Championships? 50% of you said no, 25% of you said yes, and 25% of you also said you didn't even know it was on. This week's question is, who do you think will win the NBA championship? The Golden State Warriors or the Boston Celtics? Cast your votes at our Twitter handles, which will be given out in a bit on the program. Coming up next, we're going to be discussing lots of para sports stuff that happened over this past weekend and that continue on today. Stay tuned for that conversation next year on the Neutral Zone. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth. And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at NeutralZoneBR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone. I'm Brock Richardson alongside Cam Jenkins and Claire Buchanan, and we're getting you started on the Neutral Zone and getting your weekend started, and we hope everyone has a great weekend and sit back and enjoy some of the content we have coming up for you. Right now, I wanted to chat about something that I briefly talked about on my segment with Kelly and Company, which is heard at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Mondays. And I wanted to bring it back to this program because we are all athletes in one way or another. And so I wanted to discuss something that happened at the regional this past weekend. I had decided to go back to bocce about 3 weeks ago, and the whole goal and intent was just to go and have fun and add some extra players to be able to play games of bocce, because sadly there is diminishing numbers here in Ontario specifically in the game, and so I never want to see the sport completely die because of diminishing numbers. So I went to this event, and towards the end of my career, I had trouble releasing the bocce balls. So I would really have trouble releasing it for one reason or another. Some therapists would say that there's something physical happening with my body where my muscles are too stiff now that it's hard to do that. Others would say that it's the mental portion of the sport. I'm kind of one that is of both camps, where I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. The rule that changed at this regional, which I did not know because every 4 years they do change the rules, is the drop ball rule. And I want to tell you what the original rule was, and then we'll talk about how it was called this past weekend. And then we'll get Claire and Cameron's thoughts on this as we go along. But the original rule was, if your arm had made a forward motion, that would be deemed a thrown ball, but the referee could deem intent to throw or not. Today, they can no longer deem intent on a dropped ball or not. However, they can deem intent if you intended to hit the ball off of something. So let me describe this a little bit better. So in a situation with somebody like me who has challenges gripping the bocce ball, when I grip that ball before, if I had not brought the ball forward and dropped it, therefore it would be deemed a drop ball and then I would be able to get it back. At this event, I was unaware of that rule because it was not made known to me that that rule had been changed. And I had asked the referee back a couple of times for balls, and they said, nope, sorry, we have to leave it where it is. It's in play. So at the first point, I thought to myself, okay, maybe this is because they just did a referee's course and maybe they're unsure of the rule. So I waited till the second game when it happened one more time. And this time, I just sort of felt that the individual that was reffing me this time had a better grasp and understanding of the rules. So I asked him, I said, can you explain this new rule? And he said, once you basically have your ball in the throwing position, it does not matter whether your arm goes forward or whether it drops out of your hand just sitting still. And I said, okay. And so we carried on. One ball deflected off of my foot plate and carried into the field of play. From there, I asked the referee, I said, okay, do I get that one back? And he said, nope, sorry, you don't. I sat down with the Canadian rules official representative, and I said, let me see if I understand this rule, and if not, can you explain it? And I said, so you're telling me that if I drop a ball, and no matter what object it hits off of, that ball can be deemed a throw? And he said, yes. I proceeded to play another game where the referee told me, that's okay. If you have the feeling that you're going to drop the ball, why not just throw it backwards, and then we have to give it back to you because it would no longer be in the field of play. Before I tell you guys of the scenario that kind of tipped me over the edge, I'm curious, where do you guys stand? Because for me, I look at this and I think it's kind of taking the game away from individuals who have dexterity challenges. Cameron, let's start with you.
Well, I think that, you know, taking a look at you knowing the rules, and should it be, the manager or the coach of your team to let you know, okay, these are the new rules? Or is it just something that you have to experience in order to say, oh, okay, this is something new, and adjust and to be able to play? Because when I was throwing in a chair, I know every year they seem to change the rules, whether you're allowed to, you know, stand up from your chair after you throw it, to where I had to have my seat completely on the seat and not moving at all. So, you know, that's a really hard one to kind of to grasp at the end of the day, I think, because I don't think there's any right or wrong at the end of the day when it comes to that. And I think the individual needs to, you know the rules, or to be up on the rules. Now, with bocce, with you, Brock, do you throw it, or is there a glider, I'll call it, that the ball rolls down in order to do your shot?
No, I physically throw the ball. So let me give you sort of a picture and the audience out there as well. So I have a sport assistant who's behind me on the court and is able to face the court as I am playing the game. And what happens is I call for a ball, that individual comes up, they will have the palm of their hand facing upwards with one bocce ball or two. Most of the time it's two, because they usually give me a choice of, do you want this one? Do you want that one? I then pick it up and I then throw the ball. And basically this rule now is insinuating that as soon as I have a grip of the ball that they deem as secure, then it doesn't matter when it drops, where it drops, what it deflects off of, etc. All of that makes sense because how it was explained to me was, well, we cannot deem intent on a drop ball because if you drop a ball and then it's, say it's a horrible throw and it deflects way far away and then we deem it as a drop ball and then you have a perfect shot following that, that's a problem. That I totally understand. I think where they've lost me is they can then deem that I had intent to throw it off of my knee and then, you know, deflect it onto the field of play and just hope that it ends up in the right spot. That's where I have the problem, because you're saying you're not allowed to do this over here, but we're allowed to deem intent over here. That's where I have a challenge with the new rule. And so that's sort of a picture, Cameron, on what it kind of looks like for me when I'm throwing the ball itself.
Yeah, and intent, when it comes down to it, that's, you know, really hard to know, because really only you, the person throwing it, knows what your intent was. Nobody else can really tell what the intent was. So, you know, once it is in your hand and maybe it needs to be there for two Mississippis or three Mississippis, and then once it's there for that amount of time, they would deem that to be, okay, because you were able to hold on to it for three Mississippis and then being able to throw it. So, I don't know. What do you think, Claire?
Well, it seems that with this rule change that they've shifted it back into kind of a gray area instead of it being a clear black or white situation. And it's so interesting because I have played in multiple different para sports, whether it be track and field, wheelchair basketball, and sledge hockey. But across the board, I have run into where the athletes themselves are very educated on the rules, and they definitely know what is a foul, what isn't. And but you run into refs, no matter where you are or what sport you're playing, that just are either new to the sport, seeing it for the very first time, plus reffing a game. And you can tell there's just so much lack of experience when it comes to the number of refs that are available in para sports, and then the ones that are actually fully knowledgeable about the sports that they are actually reffing. And I think in the sport of bocce, you are faced with, you're dealing with athletes that are living with cerebral palsy and already muscle tightness and spasticity that I think changing that rule kind of puts a big kind of barrier against those athletes already, because at the end of the day, this is just speaking from kind of this is just a guess of mine. You can respond to this, Brock. But it puts them in a place where sometimes you don't have full control over your muscle tightness and then the way that your muscles react. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brock, but I think this rule change kind of puts them in a tight situation where they might not have full control over.
Yeah. And you totally, totally nailed it on the head. And the ironic thing in all of this is when you get placed in a bocce class one, which I am, one of the reasons you are in that category is because you have dexterity and grip challenges. So when you've done this and you've said this is now going to be the situation, that becomes a real challenge. And the other thing I want to say is when I was in the prime of my career, I was using it's basically like the chalk that you see gymnastics athletes using. And I would use it as a spray and it would spray on and that would help with my grip. And it seemed to work really well. Well, they also took where you are unable to use that either, but they took the spray chalk away before they changed the drop ball rule. So they took the spray chalk away, and then they decided, no, no, this is how we're going to approach drop ball situations. And I told the rules committee individual for the Canadian representative that we were going to be talking about this in two different iterations, one here and one on Kelly and Company. And I don't necessarily think he knew what to say about it, but that's where we are. The thing, guys, that tipped me over the edge in all this is I was playing a 56-year-old gentleman who does nothing more than play the game recreationally. He comes out as an outing, plays two or three events a year, which was all that I had ever intended to want to do with the game from now on. And we were playing in the last game of the day, and we were talking about this rule, and he turned to me and he says, well, I'm going to get something that's going to push you over the edge. And he does not have a sport assistant because he was in the bocce class two. So that means you have to be able to get your own equipment in one way or another. And he has a basket that's on his lap, and in that basket are the six bocce balls in there. And he was grabbing one bocce ball out of the basket, and the entire remainder of the basket fell on the floor. Well, when it fell on the floor, those balls rolled onto the court and they were deemed in play. That was the situation that deemed me to want to discuss this here. Not only am I discussing it here first and on the network first, but I'm also going to write a letter to the rules committee because I was accused, I shouldn't say accused because that's aggressive, but it was mentioned to me that maybe the reason I'm doing this is because it has a direct impact on myself, which is fair, but I'm also fighting for the individuals who aren't even aware of the sport, and this may drive them away. And unfortunately, this situation has driven me away to even want to play recreationally until such time they can think of something where it works for everybody. And I'm happy to be involved in that. But every former athlete does not agree with this rule. Even some present ones don't agree. Before we wrap up this segment, I just want to give both of you final thoughts. Claire, start with you.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Brock. Actually, the committee and the individuals that actually have the impact and the power to change these rules and all that, do they directly have a disability themselves? Are they doing this based off of lived experience and knowing exactly what it feels like to have those muscle barriers themselves?
It's a fascinating question, and there are a mix of both. There are referees involved in this process. There are everyone's kind of involved. But what I find that they don't have are individuals with the dexterity issues, because some BC1s have more dexterity challenges than others. And I just don't know if it's the best representation to be able to, you know, facilitate the proper rule. And Gary Vanderbeest, who we've had on the program, was very sad to learn that this situation kind of pushed me away. And I wanted him to know that I believe that my struggles stem further than just I dropped the ball. It's like I said at the beginning, it can be partially muscular, and it also can be partially mental, as we all struggle in sports. But that in the end made this a challenge. And if anybody wants to write to the rules committee, they can write to Bocce Canada and just tell them that they want to write.
Brock, I have a question for you too.
Yeah.
Before we go to break. Now, approximately how many throws did you have, and how many of those did you throw that were affected by, you know, what you're trying to relay to the listeners?
Okay, so if I had, let's see, so I would have had about, say, 80 throws in a combination of four games, roughly speaking. And I would say out of those 80, six of them were dropped. which doesn't seem like a lot, but when it's your last ball, that becomes a real challenge. And I just think that there is that, but it's a fascinating thing you ask, because when you think of roughly, 60 to 80 balls thrown and only six of those were dropped, that's not a steep ratio, but it also depends on the time in which you choose to drop it as well.
Yeah, but isn't that also just sports, whether we're talking able-bodied or we're talking parasports, that things happen? And, we're going to be talking about basketball or hockey, and people, make a play, or for parasports, they may be hurting on a certain day, so they're not able to get to their best of their abilities. So I'm just taking a look at this and saying, if it's 6 out of 80, to be able to look at that and say, well, that's not fair. I just don't know myself if that's not fair, or if that's just, something that a person needs to deal with at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. It's very much a, because you think of fumbles in football. Well, the person obviously didn't intend to drop it in that moment either. And so there are mishaps in sports. And you're right, it could be partially. And I'm just sort of ballparking as to how many I think I throw. I could sit and do the math, but not on live radio as quickly as I would want.
And that's why I just said an approximation.
Yeah. And so it is something that is, but I also look at this and I want the audience to be aware of this too, and say that, I've been a 2-time Paralympian, 79 medals, and many, 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 many world championships. I have been to the top of the mountain, back down it again, back to the top. This was purely for recreation, and partially a lot of this was my body saying, no, we've done this enough now, and that's it. But I was also looking out to the person who's coming up from the grassroots and saying, if I drop a ball, that doesn't come back to me. That's an issue. So yes, I do believe that it's partially, it's 6 out of 60 to 80 balls. And then it's also partially, let's find a common ground in seeing what we can do with that. And again, Cameron, I never really thought of the Mississippi sort of thought there either. And so that's kind of an interesting take. And maybe that's something that I'll write in my letter to the rules committee and see where that gets me. So anything else from either of you, or?
No, I'm good.
Not at all. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Yes, I do appreciate you guys letting me chat about it. And we'll see where it goes. But wanted to get that out on the public airways before too long. Coming up after the break, we're going to be discussing, there's a rugby tournament going on in Richmond, BC, wheelchair rugby, that is. And then one, Claire Buchanan, made the women's para ice hockey national team. We're going to talk a little bit about that next here on The Neutral Zone. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you want to leave a message for The Neutral Zone, call now, 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail!
Lots of stuff coming. I was a bit early that time for the music. Lots of stuff coming at you in the second half of the program. Let's start with the Wheelchair Rugby Canada Cup taking place in Richmond, British Columbia. Canada is ranked 6th in the world. Let's go over the results that we currently know, and then I'll give you some games that are coming up. Canada beat France 54-45. Canada beat Australia the same day, yesterday, 65-58. And tonight, being Friday, they will take on Denmark at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Saturday, they will play two games. Great Britain will be at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and then Japan will be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Claire, you just wanted to send a little love over there to that team.
Yeah, absolutely. They are currently ranked number 6 in the world right now, and they had a fabulous showing at the Paralympics recently. And I know a few of their faces personally, so I just wanted to send out some love and some good luck, and hopefully we can bump up the rankings a little bit.
Yes, it's always good to bump up the ranking. And for those of you who are AMI lovers across the board, whether it's TV or audio, Travis Morrow is part of that team, and he's been on some programs with the network as well. So congratulations to him and his team, and we've had him on here as well. And one of the other really good pieces of news is that Claire Buchanan, it has made the 2022-2023 Canadian Women's National Team for Para Ice Hockey. And there is some changes that's on the roster, Claire. And first of all, congratulations, but I'm just curious to know what you think of some of your teammates.
Yes, thank you. Actually, good chunk of our program and the team are in Vancouver this weekend. So if you are in the area and actually want to get on the ice and try sledge hockey, follow our social media, and all the information is there and also on our website. So yeah, there is 7 rookies this year. We had a couple of our veterans kind of step back, and they are focusing on other sports. The very own Christina Picton is smashing it in the skiing world. And the likes of Nandini Sharma is taking over the track world. So a lot of new faces this season. And honestly, it's a wide range of ages. There's 2 14-year-olds on the team now. And it's so exciting to see such a different group of faces that are new to the program and really fired up to get going and be able to put on that Canada jersey this season.
So for people like us and other people that kind of want to know a little bit more about the new faces on the team, can you maybe talk about maybe a couple of them and what they bring to the team?
Yeah, so our fresh young faces of Aubrey and Hadley, 2 14-year-olds, they came into selection camp with a ton of confidence and just that fresh, like, love for the game. And they were some of our hardest battlers on the ice. And they are just a picture of what the future looks like for this sport. And it's very exciting that to see where this team is going and what it could look like just a few years down the road, getting even closer to our Paralympic dream.
You know, I look at this, and maybe it's just me, and you can weigh in on this for sure, but the competitive nature in me, as you said, the two 14-year-old women, the competitive nature in me would be looking at them going, do you know that you're 14 years old? Like, come on now. Why are you like, what's going on here? That would be me. But it's really good to see that fresh blood is there. But man, when you're getting, you know, worked by 14 year olds, it's gotta be a good thing probably.
Absolutely. That's actually one of the things that I said to our head coaches after selection camp is that these young athletes are going to get fast and strong and very quickly. And so they're definitely going to keep us older folks on our toes and making us work hard. And on the flip side, we actually have a couple players returning that haven't been on the national team in a few years that are right up there in their 40s and 50s. Both of our goalies are two of our oldest athletes on the team. So our coach said the other day that goalies age like fine wine. And so I'm excited to have those two goalies in nets. And it's going to be an exciting season, both to have players that we haven't been able to play with in a few years back, and just a great mix of new faces and veterans as well.
Cameron, you know what it's like to age like fine wine, don't you?
I was just about to say, I'm a fine wine, and I prefer Riesling
Cameron's
myself.
Cameron's in the best shape of his life right now.
Well, I'm trying to get back into the best shape of my life right now, but I don't think I'll ever be on the pair ice hockey or sledge hockey ready again, but I am certainly trying. And I know there's some young bucks on the team, and you know it's great to talk about them. But what about some of the people that have been there before? And again, like I know Tuyette is one of the goaltenders, and also Peggy Yasnik. She's been on the team for quite a while too. Can you maybe talk to some of the more tenured women on the team?
Absolutely. Yes. Peggy is the one player that has literally been there right from the beginning, right when the national team started until now. And now if you haven't known, then you're living under a rock. Peggy is also one of the coaches for the Great Britain women's team and has helped with the Great Britain men's team as well. So Peggy, I don't think she sleeps ever, because on top of that, she is also a scientist, and she just is constantly putting her full self into everything that she does. So, Tui is back in net, and she's actually one of our players that has played also as a forward and a goalie. So what a big, wide variety of versatility with her there. I definitely want to mention Raphael and Alana. They recently were part of the Next Gen camp with Hockey Canada and their sledge hockey program. So those two players right there are definitely in the top few athletes that are the best in the world when it comes to not only the women's game, but sledge hockey in general. And so, like I said, I'm so excited just for this team to be looking so different this year, and excited to see what we can kind of bring out from this team this year.
Well, Claire, you know what? Like, I am a little bit concerned about Peggy, to be quite honest with you, because I'm afraid she might be a double agent, because she has been with the Great Britain team and now Canada, and she's always been with Canada. So any concerns of her being a bit of a double agent there?
Not at all. I mean, she might be taking some tips and tricks back to Great Britain, but you know what? At the end of the day, that's making our entire sport better. And the best athletes out there, they want to compete against the best. And if we can just put the entire sport on that next level with helping each other out, then I am all for it. As long as she keeps, as long as she's always sporting that Canada jersey at the end of the day, I am fine with it. But Peggy's also one of our most versatile athletes as well. She has bounced back and forth from defense to forward, back to defense to forward, and now again back on defense. So she's one of those people and one of those athletes that just you can put her anywhere and she's going to be effective, both on and off the ice, as you can see, both on the bench, on the ice, anywhere. So we are very lucky to have Peggy as one of our veterans.
Sounds like a Jill of all trades. Which is always good to
exactly, yes.
have that. Can you talk a little bit about some of the events, whether it be tournaments or train camps that your team will be involved? You touched briefly and said that some of you will be in British Columbia this weekend, but talk a little bit further than that as to what's going on this year.
Absolutely. So our biggest tournament is our first installment with the IPC towards our goal of being in the Paralympics in 2030. And that will be held in the United States. And that's our worlds. And that will be at the end of August. But leading up to that, yes, there's a good chunk of us in Vancouver this weekend, and we have a couple of regional camps in Vancouver, Montreal, and then we will have a full roster a camp in Calgary in July. So our season definitely looks a bit different than it usually does. We do usually have our season run through the regular hockey season during the winter, but now kind of lining up with the other hockey tournaments under the IPC and under Hockey Canada and all that. The season has shifted a little bit. So it does look different. And right now there isn't as many tournaments leading up to Worlds, but definitely lots of opportunities to both practice together and get ready for Worlds, but also lots of opportunity for wherever we do have a camp, we always make sure to hold a try it or development session for the local athletes and anyone locally that has never tried the sport before and has been interested. So follow our social media. And if you are in the area when we are having those camps, then registration would be on our website to get on the ice with us.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And I love the whole piggyback of the try it days. I think if you're going to grow the game, that is a perfect way to do so. Claire, good luck to you and your team this year. And we'll be chatting a lot about your camps and what's happened there. And maybe we'll get Tara on the program again. And certainly we'll cover the world event there in the States when we get to it. So good luck to you and your team. And love having you on board as a regular contributor to this program.
Absolutely. Thank you. I remember you guys interviewing me for the first time on this program and now being able to be a part of it. And at the end of the day, I appreciate how much this program and this show supports women's para hockey. Cause like you said, at the end of the day, it's the exposure and getting as many people out there knowing about the sport as possible is what's going to drive us to our eventual goal of being in the Paralympics.
Absolutely. And we have this knack of telling people we're just going to interview them and then they either keep coming back for more interviews or they get stuck with us on the panel. And you were the lucky winner that got stuck with us on the panel. So as I say, happy to have you aboard as always. And we'll be chatting some more about women para ice hockey down the line. Coming up next, we're going to be switching gears to mainstream sports. Stay tuned for that conversation next here on the Neutral Zone. We will be right back. You've gotten lots of talking from Claire and I as I started with the bocce segment, and of course Cameron weighed in with some great questions there as well. And then we got on to talking about the women's para ice hockey program, and Claire led the charge there. So in this segment, we're going to put Cameron a little bit on the spot, because you've got to make sure that he's on his toes over there in Brampton. Let's just start with the NBA final, and this is our Twitter poll question, and the NBA final is between the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. Game one was 120-108. Steph Curry was absolutely ridiculous with six three-pointers in the first quarter. And the Boston Celtics came back from a 12-point deficit in the fourth quarter. Cameron, what say you on this series?
Well, to break the game one down, the Celtics did the Warriors what the Warriors usually do to other teams. The Celtics did to the Warriors. So, you know, it was close at the half. Celtics were up two, but then the Warriors in the third quarter, they scored 38 points and they were up 15. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, the Celtics just demolished them, you know, with 40 points compared to the 16 for the Warriors. And they made 9 of 12 three-pointers too. And that's just unbelievable, considering that Harford, and I think it's Al Harford, he averaged 1.3 points per game during the year. And during that game one, he was 6 for 8. And if you look at all of the other Celtics and the three-pointers that they made, like, they only made about 30% to 35% average on three-pointers during the year. And they were well over 50% for most of their shooters. And that's considering Tatum. He only had 12 points, and he's like the superstar of the Celtics, and he was 3 for 17 of shooting. So I think that the Celtics, they just had the game of their life at the end of the day. And, you know, unless they're able to shoot three-pointers over 50% again, I think that this is going to be the best game of the series that they're going to have against the Warriors.
I have to disagree with you, Cameron. Aside from all the stats off of paper, Boston, in my mind, just brings a certain type of level of grit and just gritty effort that you're not going to see in numbers. I think I was one of the ones that voted on the poll that I think Boston's going to take the championship. And I think it's just because, for one, like you said, Al Horford is playing he's playing incredible basketball throughout the entire playoffs, not just this first game of the series, but the entire playoffs. And I think that at the end of the day, with the likes of Smart on the floor as well, especially even though he's pretty banged up right now, he players like that that just don't quit and are going to be aggressive. I think the Boston Celtics won on the road as well. So I think it's going to go to seven games, but I think at the end of the day, the Boston Celtics just have that edge of grit and hard work that I don't think the Golden State Warriors are going to be able to match.
Well, I think the Golden State Warriors, they're much more of a finesse team at the end of the day, so that they may not have the grit that the Celtics have, but the Celtics, they went 21 of 41 in three-pointers. Like, they never do that. So, you know, if they can keep that up and shoot that many threes, good on them. But history shows that they won't do that. So I just think that the Warriors are just going to win this, and it may be in 5 or 6 games, but I definitely don't think this is going 7 games.
You guys call it grit. I call it annoyance, because playing against a team like that and they just come at you over and over again can be something that's hard to withstand. Let's talk quickly about Colorado and Edmonton. Colorado wins game 1-6-3 and game 2-4-0. We saw 3 goals scored in 2 minutes and 4 seconds. Quick thoughts from both of you, starting with Claire.
I think it's McKinnon's show right now. It's going to be hard for them to come back from losing 2 games. And I would love to see the Edmonton Oilers come back and take this series. Can they do that with McKinnon playing like he is? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, in order to win the Stanley Cup, most teams, they have a number one defenseman, and Colorado has that in Cale Makar. Unfortunately, the Oilers don't have that because their number one defenseman is hurt. And, you know, when McDavid is matched up with Makar going 19 minutes and 1 second against one another, the even strength against one another, the Avs had more shots 14-4. So McDavid is on the other side, when Makar is on the ice, they're only getting a total of 4 shots. So I think it's game over and Colorado's going to win.
They say that you don't lose the series until you lose a game at home. So we'll see what happens when things switch sites in game 3 on Saturday. But I'm with both of you. I don't think this is happening very easily for Edmonton. That is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Cam Jenkins, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen. And our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend and we'll talk to you next week. Be safe, be well.